Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
So today's guest on The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia is William Schmidt, PhD, and Bill is actually wonderfully credentialed for this interview. He's a Michigan State University Distinguished Professor and Co-Director of the Education Policy Center, as well as an Interim Director of the University-Wide Institute for Research on Mathematics and Science Education. Now, I won't get into the rest of the encyclopedia of credentials he's got. He's really got a background suited for this. So welcome to The Learning Curve, Bill.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
That's good. Now, I tell you, the title of your book, which is coming out, is it out yet or is it just...
Well, I just received 2 days ago the advanced copy, and I guess it's making its way into the system. So I guess it's sort of in process of being released.
Actually, I found it was available on Amazon.
Oh, well, you know something I don't know.
Yeah. And the title is Inequality for All, The Challenge of Unequal Opportunity in American Schools. Now, that's an interesting title, Bill. How did you come up with that, Inequality for All?
Well, actually, I wrote this book when I was on research leave at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, and I was describing some of it to my wife, and she one day just proceeded and said, you know, the title of that book should be Inequality for All. And what it captures is the fact that when people think about inequalities in the American educational system, they typically think in terms of minority students or students of poverty or low SES students. But the point of this book is that these inequalities in our system are essentially across the board, so that any two students, even in the same school, are not really guaranteed to have the same educational opportunities and content exposure, at least in mathematics and science.
I see in a description of your book, it says that you look deeply into factors like social class, race, content, and curriculum. Are these new factors, or have these been around for a while?
Well, the issue of inequality in education has, of course, been around for some time. It probably goes back all the way to the Brown versus the Board of Education decision about blacks being excluded from certain schools. But I think what is different about this book is we now have the data that we've collected as a part of these projects that actually shows that this inequality goes to the real heart and the core of schooling. I mean, schooling is about the transmission of the essential knowledge, skills, problem-solving, reasoning ability that students need to have to be successful in society and in seeking jobs. And that's the core of it all. And I think what this does that's so different is to actually look and understand and show data that demonstrates that there are inequalities even at this level. So the kinds of inequalities people have typically talked about, like funding or inequality and who gets what teachers, those are really only secondary. The really right. core issue is that the kids aren't even studying the same content.
That really struck me when I was reading the material on the book, that there's a huge differential between what is actually available in schools in terms of subject content and the actual, the capacity of the teachers to deliver a decent subject. That shocked me, actually.
Well, unfortunately, that is the reality that the results from these studies have shown, is that really there are those two aspects of it that, first of all, you can't expect in terms of the definition of the curriculum equal opportunities, and then secondly, that's further exacerbated by the fact that teachers come with very different levels of knowledge, and so you put those two together and you have a very unequal distribution of opportunity.
Does your book go into why teachers come to teaching with different levels of competence?
Yes, but only in a very brief way. But actually, based on other research that we've done, I think that it's because, interestingly enough, unlike many professions, which set very clearly what it is that, say, a person that's going to be a CPA, what kinds of knowledge they need to possess in order to be a CPA, I think we don't have that in educational preparation. So what one finds is that where one is trained determines much of the kind of preparation one gets, for example, in terms of the background in mathematics. And I think that variation then is just a result of our system, unequal expectations of what universities and colleges hold in terms of teacher preparation.
I'm also noting here that you and your co-author are urging the adoption of Common Core state standards in order to establish a strong foundation upon which to build an educational equality. There's been a lot of argument about whether we should have a national curriculum or national standards. Now, I noticed the word Common Core state standards. What's the specific there that you refer to?
Well, I think as some of your readers will know, the United States has just recently, through the work of the Governors Association and the what's called the Council of Chief State School Officers, those are the state supervisors, they actually got together and brought together mathematicians and math educators and teachers to actually come up with a definition of what would be the best curriculum in mathematics, the best set of standards that we could have for children. And the states then, 46 of them, have adopted these what are called Common Core state standards. And so those now are the standards of at least those 46 states, giving us a common basis across those states as to what children should learn. They specify at each grade level what are the main aspects, the main topics of mathematics that need to be covered. And that is fairly new. It's just within the last couple years. The United States has typically never had anything like a national set of standards, unlike most of the rest of the world. But this comes the closest we can have because of our Constitution. The federal government is not involved. This is the states themselves. But they've come together recognizing that it's important to have a common set of standards to make our system more coherent across the board.
Right.
I recently read an article in Education Week extolling the Common Core standards and saying that because we are now a nation and actually a world, but a nation that is world-focused and world, I mean, our students and our population move all the time and deal across countries' borders, that to stick to a very regional standard of what is math, what is competence in math and reading and everything else, is actually is holding us back, and that we really should move to a national standard so that we can compete internationally. Would you feel that way?
Well, actually, I actually support that point of view, but let me explain why. I have been involved and was involved in the first international study known as TIMSS, and that study studied some 40 countries looking at their achievement patterns, and also I led an effort to look at the standards of those different countries. And what one finds in virtually all of those countries are what they have are known as national standards. And that pattern of having those consistent statements of what it is that students are to learn in each of the grade levels seemed to be a characteristic that fostered the academic performance of these students, because it simply gave all teachers within the system a very simple, coherent view of what it was they were supposed to do in third grade or fifth grade or eighth grade. And we didn't have that, and so our system we characterized in the report we wrote as a very fragmented, incoherent system with some 15,000 local school districts all sort of deciding on what it was that should be taught in mathematics. And I do believe that is related to the relatively low performance that we have when you look at our math performance and our science performance compared to other countries. So, yes, I think, and what we learned from that research was some characteristics that helped to define what good standards were like. And that's what these new Common Core standards, they characterize. And those characteristics are focus, not trying to do everything at every grade level, coherence, that is, they reflect the logic of the discipline, like mathematics, and thirdly, that they're demanding, they're rigorous, they challenge the children. So by eighth grade, our children, when we first did the study, were doing arithmetic still when the rest of the world was doing algebra.
Yeah.
So I just have a little trepidation when it comes to these Common Core standards. If I were a teacher in the school, in a classroom, I understand wanting to be able to have Common Core standards so that you can measure every student across the country. I guess my trepidation is, as a teacher in a classroom, does it allow me the ability to teach these concepts in the way that my students will get it? In other words, it's not going to pigeonhole me into this is how you have to teach it, but as long as I teach these concepts, how I teach these concepts doesn't matter. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And I'm happy to have the opportunity to respond to that, because a lot of people think and get these two things confused. The Common Core standards and most standards in the countries we've studied essentially define what content is to be taught at which grade levels, and that's it. It does not specify the way in which it should be taught. And I think for a while I thought when I first started advocating for these kinds of common standards that the teachers would find this offensive. But it turned out that actually most teachers that I had contact with across the country actually were glad in many ways, because that wasn't necessarily their expertise to determine the what, but they were really knowledgeable about the how, that is, how to bring that to the students in their particular class. And in many ways that freed them from having to try to decide what it was that they were supposed to teach, to simply know what it was that was specified, and they were just going to put their best efforts to figuring the best way to bring it to their students. And so it gives them a sort of a sense of freedom. So that's a great question, and I think what it recognizes is the distinction between standards that simply articulate what topics should be covered at what grade levels versus the methodology, the pedagogy, the way in which the instruction is carried out.
Yeah, that's important, because we often find that students have different learning styles, and to most effectively get the message across to the kids, one needs to facilitate these different learning styles but still get the correct curriculum across. Yeah, that's good to hear that from a fellow in your side of the show, because Virginia, of course, is a Montessori trained teacher, and they very much address dealing with the children and facilitating their style to get the message.
Well, actually, it's very consistent, too, with what we learned internationally, because, again, what we found was there were these patterns of these characteristics in terms of the content, but when it came to the style of the teaching, that varied dramatically across countries. It's probably somewhat culturally reflective, and, in fact, that did not seem to have much to do with the performance of the students. That is, those countries that performed at the top in the international arena, you found differences. Some lectured, some had group work. They did different kinds of approaches to the teaching. And so I think the data internationally would support that there is no one way to teach mathematics. There may be a limited number of ways in which to sequence the topics so that they're logically presented, but the pedagogy, the instructional styles, I think you said it well. It should be left to the teacher and his or her own comfort level and the kids and what works best with them.
Well, that makes me feel a lot better. I have a copy of your table of contents, and there are a couple of topics listed here that I actually would like to ask you about. And one is, you have a chapter here or a section here called A Definition of Opportunity to Learn. What is the opportunity to learn?
Well, it's an idea that seems so simple when you say it, but it's one of those things that in order to do empirical work and to study things, you sort of have to have a definition. But opportunity to learn was defined by a man by the name of John Carroll, and he recognized that in schooling, there really were only three important parts to the. It's like a triad. You had the teacher, you had the student, and you had the content, the subject matter. That is, that which you wanted, that society said was important for all of its children to learn. And so that combination defined a learning situation. And what Carol said is then, therefore, though whether you have opportunity can be defined in a couple of ways. One way is, if you take a topic such as linear equations, did a student at this grade even have the coverage of that content? Was that included in that three-pronged interaction? Was that subject matter included with the children through the teacher? And was it yes or no? Another way to think about the opportunity to learn is how much time over a school year is allocated to the coverage of that particular topic at that particular grade level. And it turns out when you define the opportunity in that way as simply the amount of exposure you get to a certain topic in a content area, that tends to be strongly related to the achievement that the students ultimately achieve. I mean, at the very simplest level, it's you learn what you're exposed to, and you don't learn typically, especially in mathematics, what you're not exposed to. So it's a very simple idea, but sometimes the simple ideas provide the best way for us to understand and learn about how children learn.
So then opportunity to learn is really equal to the amount or time of exposure to a subject. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Also what they get exposed to, because I was noticing here.
Both parts.
You know, something that caught my attention, you give the example here of students in different algebra classes actually getting very different material content, some rather deficient and some more advanced and so on and so forth. So that is really an inequality in terms of exposed material.
No, that's a really important point you bring up, because what we found in a lot of work that we're doing, especially here in the United States, is that the name of the course, and I call this almost like a shell game, it's dishonest, that the parents are told, yes, your child is in this thing called algebra. Well, it turns out there are three or four varieties of algebra.
Yeah.
And one of those algebra courses, and this is actually substantiated by the textbooks being used, one of those courses essentially uses an arithmetic book, and others have actual algebra books and go into great depth in some of this algebra. But so, yes, that's a key part of this, and you find this at all other grades as well. You know, in sixth grade, you'll find certain topics that are not even included. And oftentimes, those topics are the very ones that are critical to the deeper understanding of the mathematics. For example, there's one that talks about the properties of fractions and the properties of whole numbers. Those are often left out in numerous classrooms. So that maybe only 60% of the kids across the whole of the United States, we would estimate, actually have coverage of that at that grade level. Well, those are the kind of topics that help you to more deeply understand how mathematics fits together.
Right.
Without that, it's like memorizing a phone book, and children then don't learn well, and they don't do well.
And they can't apply it.
No, and they can't apply it at all.
Yeah.
So how can parents find out what their children really should be learning at each grade level, and making sure that they are having this opportunity to learn, this exposure to the fullness of the topic?
That's one of the things I hope will happen, because one of the reasons I wrote this book is not only just as an academic to deal with the research that I think informs public policy, but I also wrote it hoping that the parents would read this book. Because if I were a parent, which I am actually, but I mean if I were to encounter this the first time, I'd be incensed to know that there's a serious notion that my child, although I think that they're getting the education they need, may not be being exposed to that content, especially in math, that they need to know. And the trouble with math is, if you don't learn some topic at grade 4, then going into grade 5, it builds off of that topic, and if you don't have it, you're then further confused about it.
Yeah.
So the short answer is, they could go to the website that gives that lists out the Common Core State Standards for Mathematics. That's the official title to it. And I'm sure if they Google that, they'd find those standards, And you actually can look at the document, and in pretty simple language it says these are the 10 things that a third grader should know. And I think parents should hold that up and watch for that, and go to the school if that's not happening and ask why it's not.
The other thing that struck me about the material on your book that I have here is it says that inequality for all reveals the pernicious practice of tracking or assigning students to weaker classrooms that permanently thwart their chances to improve, and it is still very widespread. What did you find on that parents should know about?
Well, that's another part of the unfortunate shell game that I think parents should know. Around the middle school especially, but in some schools it's earlier, but generally in the country it happens about 7th grade, maybe sometimes 6th grade. Schools make what I consider to be a very arbitrary decision based on how good they are at arithmetic as to what they take in those grades. And there's usually, in general, there's three tracks where the content is very different across those three tracks. There's one that's just plain more arithmetic. There's one, and keep in mind that in the rest of the world, at 7th and 8th grade, they're not doing arithmetic, so this is just like a real lack of opportunity.
Yeah.
The middle one is called pre-algebra, which is some kind of warm-up to the actual algebra, and then algebra. And they're sorted, students, into these three groups. And parents assume that the schools are right, that this is a good thing to do, and that the decision of where they go is appropriate. Well, I think parents should become much more aware of that. The data that we have collected would really suggest that there's little benefit in doing this. And in fact, what little benefit there is goes to the top-achieving children who absolutely don't need it as much as the bottom-achieving children, and it is the bottom-achieving children who simply are slighted in what they get. So it really is, it gives benefit to the brightest of students at the benefit of those slower students. And to me, that raises a social issue, and I know where I stand on it, but I think people have to ask, is that fair? Especially since schooling is the way to help, the way up, the way out, whatever you want to call it, for the students that have more difficulty in school. It is their chance at improving their life.
Right.
And it seems that they should not be the ones, especially since they need schooling the most, to be slighted in this kind of a trade-off.
Well, you mentioned the word fairness. It's certainly not fair, nor is it actually correct. Technically, because these kids are all capable of learning, our research shows that everybody has the natural ability to learn, and unfortunately, the way the educational system tends to be working here in the States, this natural ability is being blunted in the kids. We, in fact, were talking to a tutor over the weekend who began to vent her actual rage at the idea some of the children she was trying to tutor were really not responding very well, and she was speaking to the school counselors on this, and the answer from the counselors was, well, those kids are unteachable. Well, of course, our tutor, being a sweet, dear, innocent soul, simply responded with some profanity on that idea. Well, we could only agree with her that it's nonsense. The kids are capable of learning. Somebody screwed up along the way. That's what we are finding. We've had a lot of guests on that learning curve who will vouch for that proposition. And I think the point that you're making about it being unfair is valid. I'd actually add that it's incorrect.
Yes, I know. And I think that the one of the points that supports what you're saying is that, especially in mathematics, which is usually one of the things that parents and counselors and teachers even sometimes will say, well, some children just simply can't learn this. I think that what really gets in the way is what we're talking about, and that is the fact that if there are opportunities left out at certain critical points, because
right.
it's so hierarchical, because it builds, then you simply become at a disadvantage. And so when you get exposed to new topics, you don't really understand them because you never had the prerequisite, and
yeah.
they don't fit together.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of an opportunity, lack of opportunities, the inequalities that our system fosters. And that's why I think this is such an important issue for the public and for the parents in particular, and for people who set public policy around education to recognize. It's not something that's usually talked about because we assume a math class is a math class is a math class. Well, that's just not true.
Well, it's good to get the facts on this.
Going back to math, we've been on math the whole time, but going back to the students who perhaps are not quite learning quite as quickly as others, I was one of those students. I did really, really well in science, but my math was not quite as good. And now that I understand what the barriers to learning are all about, when I saw this one about it being relevant to the student, you have to make the subject relevant to the student, I jumped up and down and said, that's exactly what happened for me with math. I was simply given these formulas and told, okay, this is where you plug in the numbers and this is the answer out the other end. And nothing was ever made relevant as to why I need to know how to do this and
what's the value to
what's
you?
What's the value? How can I use it in my life? Exactly.
They probably left out also the very conceptual part so that you knew how to plug into the formulas, but you really didn't know conceptually sort of how to think about this, what it represented. And that's what the new Common Core standards, I think, why they're so radically different from a lot of the state standards that were in existence before this point in time, because many of those standards were more just, here's the skill you need, whereas these strongly push for conceptual understanding, and they do push for the application side so that students can understand how one might use these skills, these formulas, and I think that begins to make a difference. This is not an evolution in some sense. This is quite a revolution. Mm-hmm. And so we have to really support our teachers and the education system, because what I fear is that as it gets tough, as the going goes not so smoothly, people are going to say, because it's an American trait, well, let's throw it out. It must not be working, and we need to move on to something else. And I so hope that we simply take these seriously, put all the effort that's necessary to implement them. So I think this is the best opportunity we have had, I don't know, 50, maybe 100 years, to really have our children learn mathematics and give them the opportunities in today's technological world that they really need. So many of these jobs that are around demand some level of knowledge of mathematics, and that's what parents need to realize, that this is something all kids can do, and in fact, you have to simply push them. It isn't easy. It is hard, but it's worth it because it is what we need. It's a language. Yes. I think people should recognize it. It's the language of technology. It's the language of the information-driven society we're now in. And people, parents, kids need to recognize that and work hard at it.
That's right. It determines our future prosperity in actuality.
And the nation as a whole, as well as the individual, in terms of their jobs, yes.
Well, I have to say one thing. You have actually quelled my fears about the Common Core standards, because I was reading about them, and I was a little unsure about having to be, so rigid, but you're making me feel much better about them.
Well, I'm delighted to do that. I hope I can do that for your listeners as well, because sometimes I think people have that reaction. It sounds overly rigid. It's really not, and it really just represents the logic of it all, so that if it's presented this way, all kids have a shot at learning it.
Yeah. Now, I have a question. I'm an old dog at 76, and I've actually watched the educational systems in four countries change. When I came to America, one of the things I ran into was something called these new maths, where they abandoned some of the older, more proven teaching methods and actual math content that I grew up with as a young fellow. I don't know how old you are, Bill, but did you run across anything on this subject of the difference in levels of comprehension in students and ability to do maths when that change point occurred of introducing what they called new maths?
Well, new math was an attempt of quite a revolution in terms of moving to a much deeper sort of structure that mathematics has. It involves sets and set logic and this whole deeper way that more advanced mathematics is sort of grounded in. And I think the Common Core is not of that sort. It takes the basic topics, which across you know, many years in many countries has served as the basis for teaching of mathematics. So the basic substance is not revolutionary. What is revolutionary is though that the way in which they're being put together, at least the revolution for this country, is they're being put together in a coherent fashion that reflects the logic of the discipline. It fits together and it just builds this across the grades, but it's still the basic same ideas, but again it provides both the skill set that you need, that is the memorizing the multiplication tables, learning how to solve equations, all these algorithms for multiplying two digits by three digits, those are still there. But then it provides a conceptual frame in which to place this and be able to then apply it to other situations. I think that's how this is done. So it still has most of the foundation. You'd recognize this. Is okay. What I'm saying as the math you once studied.
Well, that's a wonderful point to end off for today's learning curve, Bill. Thanks for being there. It was a bit enlightening to me, I'll tell you that for free.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.